Hello there, this is me, Matt Smith, welcoming you, the listener, to this particular La Trobe University podcast. Now, when you go away on holiday, you want to choose somewhere nice, but the place also wants you to go there. You provide a bit of tourism income. You go there, you spend your money, the place ends up happy. My guest today is Professor Jeffrey Crouch. He's from the Department of Marketing, Tourism and Hospitality. He's here today to talk to me about tourism in Australia, how a place goes about pitching itself to tourists from overseas, and all the challenges that it brings along with it.
It is a very important industry these days. It represents nearly 1 in 10 jobs. In terms of global GDP, it's been growing at about 4% per year for quite some time. And of course, for developing and third world countries, it's a very major source of foreign currency and an export. So it's very important for economic development in those sorts of countries as well.
So what sort of factors go into driving the tourism industry from the economic standpoint?
Well, of course, the key factor is really customer demand. Where do people want to go? What do they want to do? What do they want to spend their money on? So the industry is very much driven by what the market is looking for and what people want to do. And of course, the competitive fortunes of different destinations and countries varies over time. Years ago, Australia was a long way from its main source markets in Europe and North America. But in more recent years, growth of the economies in Asian countries has meant that we now have a marketplace much closer to our doorstep. And so tourism to Australia has grown considerably in recent years from that area. And of course, now organisations like Tourism Australia are focusing very much on, for example, the Chinese market and increasingly also the Indian market, with the development that's occurring there. So there's ups and downs on the roundabouts of the tourism market and how it grows and how it varies over time.
It takes time for a destination to make itself more appealing than it is at the moment. If Australia wanted to market itself, it's going to have to focus on things like the weather and the beaches as its main draw point. How does a country go about pitching itself to a global audience that way?
Every case is different, of course, but in marketing, they need to find something that gives them a competitive advantage. Now, sometimes it might purely come down to the cost. This is a cheap place to visit, much more cost competitive than other places. But only a few players can be lowest cost. In most cases, a destination has to find some unique attribute that people want and that they can't get somewhere else. Beaches, for example, there are many places around the world that do have lovely beaches and also nice climates. So ideally, a destination wants to find some features that a tourist can only find in that place and that they can't get somewhere else. So it often comes down, if you really want a sustainable competitive advantage, to things like culture and indigenous cultural and historical artefacts and so on that make a place particularly unique.
We'll take some examples from our immediate region, where we are now. Let's start with Melbourne. What do you see as Melbourne's big draw card, and do you think that they market themselves well as the tourism destination?
Well, I think for a number of years now, Melbourne has been doing quite well in terms of marketing Melbourne as a tourism destination internationally, but also around Australia. I think there's been a view that Sydney is certainly Australia's gateway city, but I think the New South Wales tourism area and the government there have tended to sort of sit back and rely on the fact that it is Australia's gateway. They haven't had to necessarily try that hard, whereas Melbourne has had to be a little bit more aggressive, if you like, or a bit more strategic in how it went about it. The main thing that Melbourne has really done is focused on events. It's a city that has fantastic sporting facilities, so it's able to compete very well in that area. We might not have the most attractive climate in Australia, but when you compare Melbourne's climate to many other places around the world, and I lived in Canada for 6 years, so I've been through many Canadian winters, many people would find Melbourne's climate really quite pleasant. And so Melbourne has done very well in the last several years in terms of attracting a growing share of Australia's inbound tourism market.
And conventions as well, I seem to remember hearing recently that it's a convention destination.
Well, certainly, as we know, Melbourne's convention facilities have expanded considerably with new convention centres and so on. The conventions and meetings industry has become a major part of the tourism sector. It is very competitive. A lot of cities have built bigger and better convention centres to try to attract a larger share of that market. And of course, convention delegates do tend to spend a bit of money when they're here. They stay in good quality hotels and usually stay for a little bit longer than just the convention itself. So they often perhaps bring wives or families or husbands and do a bit of travel as well. So it is a very attractive part of the tourism economy, and certainly Melbourne and Sydney and other Australian cities have done well to strategically focus part of their strategy on that area.
If there's something that Melbourne should be concentrating on as far as the tourism industry goes, what do you think that would be?
As I said, it's been doing a pretty good job in that area in recent years, so I think it just needs to continue to probably maintain that sort of strength and focus on those things that set Melbourne apart from other parts in Australia. I think continuation, more or less, of the current sort of strategy would be the main thrust.
And the answer I had here was public transport, but...
Interestingly, I was just looking at some figures earlier that there's an analysis of the competitiveness of national destinations around the world that's done each year by the World Economic Forum. And I was looking at some figures recently for Australia. And Australia currently ranks, I think it's about 19 out of 180 odd countries that are assessed. And the two main weaknesses assessed for Australia's competitiveness as a tourism destination were our costs, high costs, as we know with the high dollar at the moment. The second most important weakness for us was the quality of our ground infrastructure.
We'll move on to Sydney then. You said that they've been going on momentum and resting on their laurels a bit on the fact that they're a gateway city. The major draw card, I suppose, if you're going to Sydney would be the harbour itself, so the local surroundings and maybe iconic buildings like the Opera House and the Harbour Bridge. How do you view Sydney?
Clearly, Sydney is a very attractive city. It's known around the world. Its iconic structures are clearly a major attraction to many people internationally. So it has a wonderful recognition and awareness as a place that people want to come and visit. If you get away from the harbour, the city is perhaps less attractive. And I know that there has been quite a bit of criticism of sort of government inaction in this area, in New South Wales, over a number of years. Of course, they've had lots of other problems in New South Wales in terms of the economy and so on that have maybe distracted their attention, but that's been their major weakness.
Would you be saying that they should be focused maybe on some other aspect of the city?
When we think about tourism, we tend to think about what are the things that attract people, but sometimes it's the most basic things like infrastructure. And we need to get some of those things right in order to make destinations more attractive too. So it's not just a case of promoting the most attractive facets of a city or a country. It's very important to be looking at the basic infrastructure as well. I've done quite a bit of research over a long time now looking at aspects of destination competitiveness. And in that work, we've identified five main groups of factors that are important if you're going to manage and enhance a destination's competitiveness. First of all, there are a group of attractors or core resources, the things that mainly attract people. So climate, history, those natural attractions and so on is one. But the second one that underpins all of that is really the quality of the tourism and basic infrastructure. Make sure those are right as well. Of course, in Sydney, and I only heard this on the news again this morning, there's this ongoing, never-ending debate about Sydney's airport and the capacity constraints there and the need for a new airport that Sydney just hasn't got around to grappling with and making some decisions and going forward at this stage. So that is certainly a major problem.
And again, access to the airport. I read something this morning about $16 to catch a train to the airport, $65 from the CBD to catch a taxi.
Well, there was even a suggestion of effectively using Canberra's airport as Sydney's second airport and building a high-speed rail system and not bothering with a new airport in Sydney. So there's all sorts of ideas.
For listeners to this podcast, that's 3 hours away from Sydney, which is why we're both kind of laughing at that suggestion. The other example, which I think is good to bring up, is maybe Gold Coast, Brisbane area, which not only have great weather, which they play on, great beaches, but have the natural wonder of the Great Barrier Reef, which is a big concern to them with its preservation. And also, I suppose, just the nightlife, the flashiness and the theme park kind of other side of it, which would hopefully for them cover all bases of anybody who would want to go there.
Yes, so Queensland has always been a state that has been the home of Australian tourism, if you like. It's attracted a lot of southerners to warmer climates, particularly during winter. The Gold Coast, of course, attracts a lot of families with young children, with the theme parks and the relaxed holiday sort of lifestyle there. So Queensland has certainly been a very important state in terms of the development and growth of Australia's tourism industry. Increasingly, of course, Western Australia is becoming a more significant part of the country for people to want to visit. One of the great attractions I think Australia has compared to many other countries, and that I think particularly Europeans find very appealing, is just the vastness of the country and the ability to completely escape and get out into the the outback, if you like, and just experience that sense of space and openness and freedom and escape that you just can't get in a lot of other parts of the world.
So you've looked at competitiveness between places in tourism. How do those pretty much completely different cities and locations and destinations, how do they compete against each other, and how does that factor in it? Would you say that there's a winner at all?
Often different places, whether they're cities or rural areas or in different countries, are really competing for different sorts of market segments. However, we need to recognise that individual tourists tend to be very eclectic in their preferences and wishes. We might have had a very busy year at work and we just need a holiday that's complete relaxation. We need to escape, relax, wind down, and that's the sort of experience we might require on one occasion. On another occasion, we might be looking for something entirely different. We might be looking for adventure or a highly active sort of a holiday. So as tourists, we tend to have very eclectic sort of tastes and needs. Every place can usually find something to offer the tourist market in one or more of those segments.
Tourism Australia made an interesting kind of gamble last year with bringing Oprah over to try and promote us to the US market. Do you see that sort of thing as being a productive use of Tourism Australia's funds, and do you see it as having a big payoff? Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, the answer to that question depends upon how many more people does that bring and how much more money do they spend as a result, purely as a result of the Oprah show being held here or other sorts of things. And so it's very difficult to know just how much impact there is. Sometimes those sorts of things can bring demand forward. People who've long been perhaps planning or intending to visit Australia, that might be the catalyst that brings them here. But then having satisfied that desire to visit Australia, maybe it cannibalises some demand that would have occurred further down the track anyway. So it's very difficult to actually measure the incremental effect that those sorts of things have. During the 1980s, of course, we had the Paul Hogan advertising representing Australia. Yes. There was the bicentennial celebrations in 1988. It was a period when I think a lot of people overseas sort of finally discovered Australia as a place to visit. So it was a period when inbound tourism to Australia grew fairly strongly. We also had a very strong and powerful Minister of Tourism at the time, John Brown. He was a senior figure in the Labor government cabinet during the 80s, and he was able to convince his colleagues to provide significant funding increases to the Australian Tourist Commission to do more advertising of Australia overseas. So there was a lot of things that were happening in Australia's favour during that decade. Towards the end of the 1980s, the Australian Tourist Commission came under some criticism for not having done any research to measure the effectiveness of their overseas promotion of Australia as a destination. They hadn't been doing anything to measure just how effective that was. I did a bit of research at the time for the Australian Tourist Commission to try to put some sort of a figure on just how much impact the destination marketing had on bringing more people to Australia. And fortunately for them, found that there was a positive impact of the increased funding that they'd been spending after accounting for changes in things like income, airfares, exchange rates and so on. When you took the effect of those out, there was still a positive relationship between the promotion of Australia and inbound numbers coming into Australia. But that's the sort of work that does need to continuously be done to really demonstrate just how effective the Oprah type things are, or more broadly the money that's being spent on destination promotion and the effect that that has on the market.
That was the year of Paul Hogan being the ambassador, throw the shrimp on the Barbie thing, which is still remembered and iconic. Mm-hmm. Does Australia need that sort of ambassador? We no longer have Paul Hogan. Do we have Lara Bingle at the moment? Is she?
No.
She used to be.
Mm-hmm. When you're designing advertising programs, it is very difficult to know what sort of effect they will have. I mean, if you knew the answer to that question, you could make a lot of money very easily.
Yeah.
And so it's very difficult. It's not something that you can measure with any great accuracy. Sometimes you do the best research in the world and come up with a great idea and implement it and it doesn't work. And other times, seemingly poor ideas can work. It's very difficult to scientifically design advertising campaigns that are guaranteed to work. Oftentimes it just comes down to how the market ultimately will respond.
How does the challenges of tourism affect policy? I suppose the biggest thing that comes to mind is the environment.
Mm-hmm. Tourism has lots of different types of effects. Of course, we tend to focus mainly on the economic effects, job creation, export dollars, and so on. it also helps to support a number of other industries. So tourism is not actually an industry, it's really a collection of many industries, from transport to food services, accommodation and so on. Even the arts sector, cultural sectors, indigenous areas are significantly advantaged by tourism. So from a policy perspective, we need to recognise that tourism has such broad effects, not just purely the economic effects. Also, the impacts that tourism has on social and cultural factors, as well as environmental factors. And it can have both positive and negative impacts. If we have too many tourists, it can create crowding. Some areas, resort areas, that become very popular as tourist destinations, often can result in an increase in property values, and it means that the locals living in that area can sometimes find that rents are going through the roof or their property taxes are increasing and they can't afford to live there. There's all sorts of cultural and social and environmental problems that can occur. At the same time, there's certainly some major advantages that can be derived in those areas. For example, if we look at Africa, wildlife and the problems of poaching and things like that, tourism can represent value in maintaining and caring for wildlife. So the local population in Africa is now able, if they take a different attitude towards wildlife, to now suddenly say, well, hang on, here's another more sustainable economic future that we can gain by using tourism as a way of preserving those sorts of environmental assets.
That's Professor Jeffrey Crouch. He's from the Department of Marketing, Tourism and Hospitality at La Trobe University. And that's it today for the La Trobe University podcast. If you have any questions, comments or feedback about this podcast or any other, then why don't you send us an email? We're at podcast@latrobe.edu.au.